What's going on? Brian, Nico, Mike and Dustin, listen up. Pitch Black was one of my first jobs. It was, Vin wasn't even like a star then. Vin Diesel wasn't even a star then. I remember when I was shooting, I was 15 years old when I was shooting Pitch Black. We were shooting Cooper Petey and I was living in Sydney and they used to fly me to Cooper Petey and Queensland, the Gold Coast. And I remember I used to shoot in Cooper Petey, which is one of the opal mining town of Australia. 99% of opals are mined in Cooper Petey. This is where we were shooting. Mad Max was shot there too. And I remember when I used to shoot in Cooper Petey and I used to hang out with Vin and Cole, and David Tui was a director. He wrote The Fugitive. And I used to come back to school after I was shooting, and I would come back to school and I'd be like, I'm shooting Vin Diesel. Do you know who Vin Diesel is? And all my mates at school are like, Vin Diesel, who's that? Who's Vin? Who's Vin Diesel? I'm like, you don't know who's Vin Diesel? Because everyone on set would be like, Vin Diesel's the next thing. And I'm like, amazing film. Obviously, it started Vin's career. And, you know, like, that was my first major, major job into, like, a Hollywood big-budget film. And, I mean, that was amazing. But I just want to say to you guys, I'm sending you love and strength and power. And I just want to say, listen, before you do anything, don't go out there. And I'll see you guys soon.
In a world where zombies, ghosts, serial killers, and vampires all exist, it's Nico, Brian, Mike, and Dustin, and they are all that stand between you and the films that could end the world. Welcome to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Podcast. Just want to thank all of our fans and listeners. Really appreciate the support. You guys are awesome. Before we get into tonight's film review, just want to give a quick shout out to our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Everything about our podcast is on the website. All of our episodes and interviews, if you want to check those out. We've done some incredible interviews in the past. Go check them out there in a specific tab by themselves so you don't have to scroll through hundreds of episodes on Apple or Spotify, etc. We also have our store if you want to grab a shirt, a mouse pad, a hat, all that good stuff. We'd love to see your pictures, you know, rep your favorite podcast. And Chan's Etsy page is also attached if you want to grab a Tumblr. All of our social media links are on there as well. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. Like us, subscribe us, follow us, all that good stuff. And the last thing I want to shout out on our website is our Patreon. We call it Blood Donors. We have the traditional monthly reoccurring kind. If you want to support us, help us pay the bills, as we say. Or if there's a movie you want us to review, that option is available as well. Just check out our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Also, if you haven't noticed, we've recently joined the Believe Network. So there's some ads on our program now. But if you want ad-free content, go check us out on Blood Donors. The ad-free episodes will be available there. We appreciate your support. We hope you enjoy the episode. All right, guys, let's jump into the film review. I'm really excited to get this episode done. Anita Russell, this is her Blood Donor pick. We really appreciate your patience. She chose 2000's Pitch Black. And I saw where she left a comment on Twitter X where she really enjoys our show and she knows that we're split. You know, some of us don't like sci-fi as much. And I'm sure she was talking about me. But I'll be honest with you, I enjoyed this movie. I thought it was fun. I had a blast with it. It's one that I would definitely give a rewatch at any time. I thought he was really cool as Riddick. Rhoda Mitchell, she was great as well. Man, the ending with her though, man, it kind of ripped my soul out, but it caught me off guard, which I can appreciate. We got the great Keith Davis. Love him. He was great. I had fun with it and I'm looking forward to reviewing it. Brian, you want to go ahead and give your thoughts now?
So I actually saw this in the theater on a date in 11th grade, and I watched it again when I bought the DVD, but I hadn't seen it in probably over a decade. So I was excited to revisit this one. And I mean, I'm excited to say I pretty much feel the same way. I mean, I like this movie a lot, and it was actually on my list to pick. which, I mean, the sequels are terrible to me. Like, I like the intimate setting of this one, that confined setting, I guess is what I'm trying to say. The sequel was fucking awful and tried to be Blade Runner or some weird, huge intergalactic mythology thing. I don't even fucking know. Like, I pretend it didn't exist. Dustin's really good at doing the same thing. But this one's held up over the years. I mean, there's some visual effects that you could point to, but you know, I think they hit it pretty well. And I've said this before, but my favorite movies out there, Tears of the Sun, etc., like, they have ensemble groups of characters that are just picked off one by one. And, you know, couple that with sci-fi like here, I mean, you've got me. I just think this was one of those prime examples of a movie that never needed a sequel. But then again, you know, I had a different ending in mind as well. So we'll get to that.
I just want to start off by letting everyone know I will not be reading scene by scene for this episode. Just want to throw that out there for everyone. All right, I'd never seen this film before. I think it's pretty obvious why. Sci-fi, not my thing. So, I've heard of this movie. I've seen clips on Twitter, but it's never something that's really, like, reached out and grabbed me and gotten my attention. And so, I was excited because, again, a movie I've never seen, and you guys know the rules. One watch, those are my notes. I want to take it in live, pause, and get my natural reaction. So, look, all in all, for what it is, I think it's fun. This is never going to be my cup of tea. You know, I'm never going to go all in on a sci-fi film. It's just not something for me. But as far as sci-fi movies go, like sci-fi horror, I think this is well done. There's really good acting. Brian, you mentioned the visuals, and I think you may have mentioned, not from you, but from other people, that there's visuals that don't hold up. I disagree. I think the visuals of this movie are kind of its strength, man. Like, there's some really cool fucking shots in this movie, and to be from 2000, I think that was pretty impressive. I think the creatures look good. I think it's a cool concept, and shout out to Carolyn. I know it's women's, you know, it's Women's History Month, man. One of my favorite female characters we've covered in a long time. She's fucking awesome. And also, Call Me Sometime, which I'm going to repeat twice to her in my notes, so don't worry about that. All in all, I think it's a fun watch and a little bit better than I expected, so I'm happy with it.
Yeah, so I didn't see this movie when it came out. I think I was in 7th grade, and it just wasn't on my spectrum at the time, but when I got to high school and The Chronicles of Riddick came out, I think my sophomore year of high school, maybe junior. I think junior actually. But a lot of my friends were really wanting to see it. And so they were hyping it. I watched it and I liked it, but it wasn't my favorite. And then recently I rewatched it and I liked it a lot more than I remembered. And then this time when I rewatched it, I liked it even more. So I think it's just my brain wasn't fully developed, man. And I liked it a lot more. It's fast paced, high octane. Yeah, it's a very enjoyable movie.
Was that high octane a Fast and Furious reference?
Mm-hmm. There might be one or two of those in my notes. We'll see.
I'm afraid I don't understand the reference. I'm just kidding.
All right, guys, you got any more opening thoughts? We just jump into the scene by scene. All right, let's do it. The film starts with shots of the spaceship Hunter Gratzner as Riddick narrates. If you're prone to seizures, proceed with caution in these scenes. There's a lot of flashing lights. We see the others in a state of cryostasis being transported. Shit hits the fan as the hull is breached. Fry lets herself out her chamber, as does Owens. They realize the captain is dead and begin emergency takeover of the ship to get it back on track. She begins purging parts of the ship to get it level. She says it's too heavy in the ass. She tries to purge the entire ship. I'm not going to die for them, but the lever jams. The ship crashes on a planet, skidding across the surface. John scopes out the ship, but is grabbed by Riddick with his foot shackles. He gets free, beating him with a nightstick or something like that. Jump scare as we realize Owens isn't dead yet, having his chest punctured. Imam and his three students begin praying. Paris and Shaza both agree they're having trouble breathing, as Fry tells them it was likely a rogue comet that caused the crash. John tells Fry it's best to keep Riddick locked up forever. He's very dangerous. Riddick sees a break in the beam he's cuffed to and pops his shoulders out of socket and gets free with the torch. The crew gets weaponed up as they realize Riddick has escaped. Paris shows them there are three suns, so much for Nightfall. Johns gives Zeke a gun and says, one shot, kill him if you see him. Brian, that's opening set of scenes. What'd you think?
Yeah, pretty interesting open. Very good CG, I thought, especially for the time. Right off the bat, I mean, it has that gritty Starship Troopers type feel to it, you know. And I liked that momentary tension that it built up with, you know, Fry deciding to kill everyone on the ship basically before having her decision taken from her. You know, I'll talk a little bit more about that later in the last set of scenes or so. But I feel like that it was a good enough moment there that it didn't really need revisiting later on. Rhoda Mitchell, by the way, Man on Fire, Silent Hill, London Has Fallen. I love that Has Fallen series, by the way. Fucking incredible. But, I mean, she does fine for what she's given, but I'm going to disagree with you, Nico. Like, I'm just not a fan of her character, to be honest. I mean, she got on my nerves. And let me just say this right off the rip. Rip. But anyway, since we're talking about the cast, y'all brought up Cole Hauser. You know, first of all, it took me an embarrassingly long time watching Yellowstone to realize that Rip was Cole Hauser because of the beard and whatever. So whatever, shut up. My point is that my Cole Hauser, this is Too Fast, Too Furious, bad guy Cole Hauser. And he steals this movie from me. Like, Vin Diesel can fuck off. Like, this movie is badass because of Johns, and I'll die on that hill, in my opinion.
Is Cole Hauser related to Doogie?
He is not.
Oh, okay.
No. You also said my Cole Hauser, and I was like, who the fuck is Michael Hauser?
Oh. I like that. That was like the rapist joke on Saturday Night Live. And so a therapist, that made me better.
Come on out, you rapist. Oh, sorry.
Fun fact, and I'll shut up. Diesel actually performed the shoulder dislocation stunt for the crew, holding a chain between his hands. And although he couldn't do it with the cuffs on, apparently, so the version we would get is mostly him with some special effects thrown in. But that's pretty cool regardless. Just good opening. Lots of funny-ass lines, in my opinion. I mean, Hauser's delivery of motherfucker made me laugh. And John's telling Paris the tribe went extinct because they couldn't hunt with fucking blow darts. Like, that was perfect again, too. Again, Hauser steals it. Best lines, in my opinion.
You said you don't like the character of Carolyn?
Not really. She gets on my nerves, being
honest. Hey, go fuck yourself, pal. Anyway, that's my new queen.
Sorry.
I'm just kidding. I love you, but also go fuck yourself. this opening, I know they're in a spaceship. It looks like that, you know, that spinning carnival ride that you get in, and inevitably someone's going to fucking throw up in there. That's what that looks like in the scene. I thought it was pretty funny and a cool little nostalgia thing for me because it
wasn't that Gravitron. Is that the name of that? Or something
yes.
Like that?
And I say throw up because it was yes. Me. I'm the thrower upper. In the machine. Anyway,
you usually have such good control of your bodily functions.
Right?
Sing along with the champ. It's over, pal. Anyway. You got enough stuttering jokes in on the other show. Anyway. Also, when I see this setup, I think Jason X. So in my head, this takes place in the same fucking universe. That is my headcanon. And I don't want to hear any questions about it. I will say I will commend the visuals later in the film, but the asteroids here in the open, the CGI is fucking rough, man. It did not age well. I will say I was about to have an epileptic seizure watching this crash, though, so that was tough. It was anything but pitch black. Woo-hoo! Anyway,
I was not expecting people to be alive here. I'm not going to lie. I don't know what. Again, I've never seen this movie before. You know, you talked about Carolyn. She's right, though. She saved all their asses. They should all be thanking her, okay? And plus, they could land on worse than this planet. I mean, it looks pretty decent. It looks like a, you know, like a fun Mars. That's all I'm going to say.
But, I mean, she tried to kill them all.
Well, what are you going to do?
Hey, it's funny you had the fun fact in there, Brian, because I said, since when the fuck is Vin Diesel double jointed like this? That is fucking impressive. Good for him.
Man, this does make me wish we could explore other planets this easily like this. That feels like a whole lot of fun or scary, whatever. And last thing I said was, oh shit, Keith David. And every time he pops up on our show, I have to quote the line for Barbershop. The sign outside will always say Barbershop, where you can get a trim and then you can get some trim. Go ahead, Dustin.
You know, what's funny about that is every time I see Keith David, I think of Requiem for a Dream when he goes, well, it ain't going to suck itself.
Which is also a great line. Both are awesome.
All right. The special effects in the opening scene aren't bad, like especially considering the time the movie was made, 23, 24 years ago. Not bad. I like the premise of the movie. They bring us in nicely with Vin Diesel narration and then catch us up on what's happening. Ship was moving through space very fast and furious. Seems like they should have made the windshield out of sturdier glass, though. Like, I know if I was in space, I wouldn't want the windshield to be so easily shattered. Just me. Pretty intense stuff so far, and we haven't even got the title card. Then again, we don't get a title card. Did I miss it? Like, that was weird to me. I watched it and I was like, what the hell? Okay. Crazy jump scare when Buddy suddenly comes back to life with a shard of metal sticking out of his chest. It's kind of crazy, though, that he went from looking dead to screaming like that. Annoying, honestly. Like, it was overly dramatic. So unnecessary. Seeing Riddick dislocate his shoulders like that to get free, like, that hurt me to watch. And like you said, knowing that he did it himself is insane. I'm not committed to any job, no matter how big the paycheck is, to do that, I don't think. It's a very solid opening. I'm invested.
Riddick is watching the crew walking in the desert. The screen is a nice blue as Johns pulls a gun on Fry, sneaking up on him. Paris watches Zeke's back as the knife is put to his throat by one of the kids. The crew makes it to what they thought were the trees, but it's actually a communal graveyard. Fry wonders if the whole planet is dead. We see Riddick hiding amongst the giant skeletons. Johns hands Fry some liquor and takes a swig, knowing it could dehydrate her faster. Riddick cuts a piece of her hair off swiftly, sniffing it. Zeke is digging a hole, and the pilgrims find some interesting pieces of technology in the sand. They make their way to a base and check the place out. Fry runs to the others, yelling, "Hello, Mecca," as she finds a ship that can get them off the planet. Paris is alarmed, joining Shaza and Jack, thinking Riddick is there to kill them. Zeke kills the man, thinking it was Riddick, but Riddick has posted up in Paris' lookout spot. Fry says the ship has no juice as Johns hears gunshots. Zeke looks into a hole in the ground and is grabbed by something and begins shooting at it. Shaza runs towards his screams, but he's pulled under, leaving a bloody mess. Riddick appears and runs off. Johns trips him and removes his goggles. Shaza attacks him too, asking what he did to Zeke. God damn, I got Mike syndrome going on. Riddick is cuffed again as Fry.
Go fuck yourself.
Riddick is cuffed again as Fry asks, "Where's the body?" Riddick says, "It ain't me you got to worry about now," as she asks to see his eyes. He leaps towards her, revealing his bluish silver eyes. Jack asks how to get eyes like that. Riddick can see what happens in the dark with these modified eyes. He says he's killed before, but not Zeke. All right, Brian's next set of scenes. What do you think?
First of all, three sons. God damn. I'm glad Kubrick did not direct this movie. Second of all.
You know what? Go fuck yourself, pal.
Wait, what? What?
Tomorrow.
Yeah, you're in a barren desert with rocks, so you can hear everything. And you're telling me Fry was able to sneak up on a man, John? So, get the fuck out of here with that. But shout out to Faris Durrani, who plays Ali, one of the Muslim kids. He did the opening for us. But I will have to say, sorry, I laughed with them walking around screaming, "Assalamu alaikum." Like, doesn't that mean like peace be with you or something like that? Why would they be walking around screaming that?
Because they're saying if there's anyone there, we come in peace. Whatever. It's basically the same thing. Like, they don't want to get ambushed.
They should have just went with some made up thing. I think that would have been more effective than that. I don't know. I think Riddick cutting Fry's hair while they're in that Triceratops or whatever fucking skeleton they were in, I thought was dumb. It was unneeded. It didn't add, in my opinion, the tension that it was trying to portray there. But I do want to bring up some of these shots, and I'll shut up. Yeah, the blue hue was, you know, it was of the time. We've talked about The Matrix and the effect it's had on movies back then with previous episodes. But some of those out-of-focus shots I thought were really effective. And it really made me feel like that it was hot as shit out there. Like, it got across what I think it was trying to do. And what I read was that those shots were intentional. I mean, director David Tuohy recalled having to work hard to convince the cameraman to have out-of-focus shots on purpose. And I really liked that. I thought it was cool.
Man, where the fuck did this bluish hue come from? I will say, it's not like I hated it. I just thought it was really random. There was no real explanation for it. I mean, I kind of just want to know, and you kind of explained it, so I guess that answers my question, so I'll shut the fuck up. I will say, you know, there's a few times where I think this kid is a badass. I mean, I would kind of be scared around this motherfucker personally. Now, later on, you know, not really, but in this part, okay, yeah, he's a little scary. I will say, as they're walking on the surface of this planet, they run into desolate-looking trees. and a big, you know, skeleton rib cage. This ain't a planet. They landed in the fucking jungle of the Pride Lands from Lion King. I recognize an elephant boneyard when I fucking see one, okay? That's all I'm going to say. She's crazy because she's trying to play humble. I would just be taking – I would go full heel if I were her, since Brian doesn't like her anyway. Double middle fingers. Brag about saving them all. I would not be humble. Oh, Captain, my Captain is what you'd call me, pal. I do think the shot of them walking through the rib cages, I guess, and that's really all I can think they are. I think that's a cool shot. They get like a really long – they get like a long, drawn-out shot of it, and I think it's really cool. They do a good job here making someone – or of the suspense of making it feel like someone is outside of that craft. As they go back and forth with the noises and stuff, I think it's a really good job. Shooting the wrong guy, never a way to go. What a fucking moron. Although, stand your ground law, so he's fine. No big deal. look, man, the funniest part of this whole movie to me is Vin Diesel looking over that whole thing happening like he's propped up on a lawn chair with a beer in his hand. That shit was fucking funny. I thought that was good stuff. Although Vin Diesel did get his ass beat here, so that's almost unbelievable right there. He has some creepy-ass eyes in this film that I enjoy. And last thing, who the fuck pays someone in menthol cools, man? That is disrespectful, man. That's disrespectful.
Whoa.
You know what I said?
First of all, he's talking about in prison. I mean, they
find a better stuff. Find a better cig, pal. Menthol cools. Fuck.
You had to be there, man. You couldn't open up a Sports Illustrated in the 90s without seeing a fucking cools ad.
You're right about that.
Also, dude, I still have a four set of Camel cups from back in the day. Joe's Place. You're welcome.
I really like the different lighting depending on which sun is up. I think that's a great touch, going from the blue hue to the reddish hue or the orange or gold, whatever you want to call it. I like that. We see the boneyard, and it reminded me of the graveyard on Skull Island, but also of when Simba tried to impress Nala. I was really waiting on someone to say danger. I laugh in the face of danger. Like, I really wanted that, man.
See? You saw it too, bro.
Yeah, I did, definitely.
Pride Lands. Come on.
Johns has no peripheral vision at all. How did he not see Riddick behind Fry there? Get out of town, man. Right? Exactly. I hated that. Huge nitpick. Zeke is a little too trigger happy. I know everyone's scared because of Riddick, and, you know, he'd want a gun, but I'd probably take his away. Can't just be shooting motherfuckers in the face like that. Great way to shoot things from Riddick's POV to show how he sees them. I really like the look of when they switch to his point of view. Like that a lot. And then, like, 30 minutes in, and we get Riddick's first on-screen dialogue. I like that, too. Like, I know he did the narration in the beginning, but it just makes his character much more mysterious to not have him talk until now. This is a good set of scenes.
Johns tells Fry he thinks he buried Zeke somewhere as they head back to where Zeke disappeared. Fry crawls into the tunnels to investigate what happened. We see a creature move in the background and run away. Fry finds what's left of Zeke's leg and boot and has her flashlight knocked out her hand. She begins climbing out the tunnel and her support cable is pulled from below. She cries out for help until suddenly Imam and Johns break out a hole in the ground, pulling her out. She's pulled and almost dragged back down until she's free from her harness. Johns makes an offer to Riddick. He wants his help in exchange for letting him go free and not back to jail. Riddick gets the gun from Johns, saying to remember this moment. The crew gets supplies and head back to the ship they found earlier. Paris drops his bottle of liquor and exchanges pleasantries with Riddick, who chugs the entire bottle. Imam and his pilgrims get the water running, rejoicing, taking a few drinks. Johns mocks Riddick, treating him like a dog, telling him to join the party. They all drink some water in celebration. Fry is curious why they left so much stuff behind. Riddick says they were all killed by the creatures that killed Zeke. Imam asks if they've seen Ali. Ali opens the roof up, letting in all the sunlight. Ali is attacked by these attacking bat bird-like creatures. Imam sees a door shaking. He opens it up and the creatures all fly out and descend into the tunnels below. Imam finds Ali's decimated corpse. All right, Brian's next set of scenes, what'd you think?
All right, so hold up. Let's examine the situation here that we have going on. You see blood all over the place where Zeke was attacked. A prisoner, who you're scared to death of, says, go deeper to look for him. And her stupid ass answer to that was, okay, let's do that. These dumb ass motherfuckers. Look, okay, whatever. Definitely a lot of alien vibes, though, going on while she's down in the tunnels there. Also a lot of sunlight. to be underground. Just throwing that out there. But it was, you know, it was a semi-tense little scene there. Fry coming back up and saying, like, that was so stupid. That won me back over. It definitely got a yup out of me. So I'm glad she came out and actually admitted that. Kind of broke the fourth wall there with that. There's a really cool shot, though. Shout out David Tuohy again and David Egbe, the director of photography. That close-up of the eye that transitioned into the dripping water from the condenser, I thought that was a standout shot, in my opinion. Very good. Not a whole lot of notes on this set of scenes for me. Just honestly, your typical sci-fi movie right now. We're 45 minutes into it, so I'm kind of ready for it to kick into gear, and most of all, for it to get dark.
Yeah, I will say this is really where I start to feel like, all right, man, is something going to happen, or what's going on here? And again, a little biased because of my not super great love for sci-fi movies. But anyway, I mean, I understand blaming Riddick right off the right off the cuff here, but I mean, we can at least try to look for other suspects of what went down. I mean, I feel like I know he's the criminal on board, but I don't know. Anyway, I will say the foot being cut off there, I thought that was a pretty good jump scare. That got me a little bit. It was out of nowhere. I thought it was really well. We are, you know, I know I kind of complained about it, but we are picking up intensity a little bit at least here in this set of scenes. You know, like I said, stuff's finally happening. And then it's another fucking scene where, you know, Carolyn's kind of crawling through whatever you call that, I guess a tunnel, where I feel fucking claustrophobic. And that is one of my least favorite feelings in the world, is to feel claustrophobic. I wouldn't have not done what she did. I don't know, man. Like, and again, I've never seen the film, so I've only taken this in one time. Pause. And I kind of side with Riddick on the Riddick versus Johns situation, like already very early in the film. And I know it's probably designed that way, but again, only seen the movie one time. So this is my notes on that watch through. I mean, what's stopping him from killing Johns here, though? He's a fucking dick. And I know you said he made the movie for you. And I understand that from a character standpoint, but he is an asshole. So at the very least, I feel like Riddick could have offed this guy a lot earlier. Like I said, at the very least, the visuals of this film are very interesting. The switching of hues back and forth. And I think, you know, the backdrops of these like other planets and three suns and all this stuff, I think it makes for, you know, attention getting visuals that I really like. I would tell these space birds to leave Keith David alone. God damn it. That's a fucking pop culture hero. You leave that guy alone. And I will say, last thing, the corpse shot, great. I thought it was a great shot.
So when Fry goes crawling into the hole looking for Zeke, I can't help but wonder why there wasn't a trail of blood. Like, it was pretty bloody when he got dragged down there, and then there's just no blood anywhere. All right. Great shots of the monster behind her on the cave wall, or the creature, or whatever you want to call him. Great way to build tension there without being too over the top. The cuts to Riddick yanking on his restraints was odd to me, though. Like, it's really unnecessary. We know he's chained up. You don't have to show him flapping his wings like a damn bird while he's chained up. I don't know. It didn't work. But I do like how he returned the favor to John, saying, I want you to remember this moment. So it's like they owe each other some sort of gratitude and kind of holds each other at bay. I like that a lot. Then he joins the makeshift crew, and it's like they're a family, dare I say. Okay. It's always funny watching movies that are 20-plus years old and are set way in the future, too. Like, the graphics on their computer screens are so outdated. It was funny to me. Like, I laugh at it anytime I watch an old movie that's supposed to be set, you know, 30 years from where we are in present day, and the computer graphics look like something we had in 1996. I don't know. The action's really picking up, though, in this set of scenes. I like it. I like where we're going.
Johns drops a green flare into the tunnel as Riddick describes what he believes happened to the previous group. John says to stick to the light. The creatures like darkness, as Fry realizes the samples are dated. She realizes it's time for an eclipse to happen as Riddick asks if they're afraid of the dark. Great show for my childhood, by the way. Johns tells Fry how Riddick escaped, and Johns plans on backstabbing Riddick. Fry wants to stick to the original plan. Johns doesn't want to give him another chance to steal another ship. Riddick is outside the ship shaving his head for some reason. Riddick appears with Fry and begins questioning her about his escape and her thoughts. She says she's scared of him. He asks her if he can trust Johns. What does she think? He reveals Johns isn't a cop. He's a bounty hunter. Riddick is unsure what happens when the lights go out, but once the dying starts, this family will rip itself apart. Johns gives himself a shot in his tear duct, which was horrible to look at, as Fry asks who he really is. He grabs her arm and shows her his battle scars from Riddick. It's personal with Riddick for Johns. Fry and the others are in awe seeing the other planet's rings. Shaza says, "We need to get the equipment from the other ship now." They take the Sandcat, and Paris uses this moment to get more alcohol. The others grab the cells and load up the Sandcat. Darkness falls on them quickly. They hear the screeches of the creatures in the distance. They begin to pour out the tunnels by the thousands. Paris tells them to flee, and they begin running towards him. Riddick and Shaza fall down to avoid being caught. However, Shaza gets up too quick and is grabbed by the creatures and ripped to pieces. Riddick wipes his hands clean and joins the others. He removes his goggles and sees all the creatures in the distance flying towards them. All right, Brian, next set of scenes, what do you think?
All right, so I'm going to kind of call out how Fry just hears the 22 years and then for some reason goes back to the model that just so happens to show this eclipse as a model and lets you progress 22 years on the model. To me, that's something that maybe sounded better on paper than translated on film. Just throwing that out there. I just wasn't a fan of it. It's that old trope where it's like, that date is important. I remember something I shouldn't. Oh, that date's right now. I mean, I don't know. Come on. But it gets us where we need to be, so whatever, but I've got to call it out. I just think it would have been fine without, or I think it just would have been fine with them just noticing that, you know, an eclipse is happening, right? Instead of like expecting it. I don't know. I will say it's starting to play out here in this group of scenes, but there's some good dramatic tension between Fry and Johns and Riddick. Like, they do a good job with that. And another great written line with, this little psycho fuck family is going to rip itself apart when the dying starts. Little fun fact, Nico, you said it drove you, or it was hard to watch, but that was actually my man Cole Hauser's idea for Johns to shoot up the drugs in his eyes. Great call. And I don't know which version y'all watched, but if Dustin watched the DVD, he watched the unrated version. But a little addition in the unrated version that is pretty much the only one of significance is here, where Fry voices her doubts about Johns and if he's the proper leader for the group. And then we also get to learn that Johns was shot by Riddick and that the bullet is still in his body, and that's why he needs morphine. But in the theatrical version, it just seems like John's a junkie and shooting up morphine. So that is a pretty noticeable difference in the two versions there. And last thing, is it just me or, you know, I don't know, maybe it's just because it's an alien planet, but God damn, that moon moved fast as fuck to cover up that sun, didn't they? Like, great kill, though, with Shaza being ripped apart. Go ahead.
Things move different on other planets, brother, so I guess you never know. Also, what the fuck are we changing filters again for, man? What the fuck? I don't understand the decision. Again, it doesn't look bad or anything. And I will say the green flare going off with that, you know, bluish hue, I thought looked pretty cool. But I don't know. I don't understand it. Yeah, man. I mean, this, you know, you mentioned it. The conversation between Johns and Carolyn is super effective to me. It gets across everything that's gone on in the past. You know, with Riddick. And I do think they kind of, in my mind, you know, I wasn't all the way out on Johns at this point, you know, but I'm kind of switching here. Like, they almost do a double turn, or not that Carolyn was ever bad to me, but I think maybe intentionally she was, like you said, annoying. And then now we get Johns, and I feel like they kind of do, you know, the old wrestling double turn here. Well, I felt like it was very effective, and it got me more interested in the character of Riddick. Right now, he's the muscle. He's a criminal. We don't know a whole lot about him, except for his funky eyes. And now we know, you know, we have a little bit more backstory. I will say, look, like this man was shaving his fucking head with maple syrup. So that was, man, that was something. all I'm saying is, Carolyn here is a fucking queen, and all these fat, sweaty, ugly men are gaslighting her. I'm sick of this shit. God damn it, man! They do it for the whole fucking movie until she finally takes over. Anyway, more cool visuals. It looks like just another planet's gliding by. I guess that's what it is. But anyway, I would also like to ride a buggy around on another planet. That would be fucking fun to me, man. I used to go mudding in those things because I'm from the fucking middle of nowhere and you have nothing else to do. So I would love to do that on, say, Mars or, you know, in Lion King, Pride Land, whatever. I will say, the minute I hear these creatures make noise, I'm, man, listen. I've shit myself from too many shots of Rumplemints. I would shit myself from seeing these many creatures. Absolutely fucking not. Get me out of here. Goddamn Shaza, I wrote this. Goddamn Shaza, they tore your ass to pieces. It's Jova for you. Last thing, more, I thought the goggles looked, you know, and seeing it through the goggles, I thought was, again, pretty cool visuals. So that's all I got.
So it's a big epiphany when we find out there's an eclipse every 22 years. I really like that. It's like the first time that she's playing with the little model there and you see the ticker, it doesn't really click. And then when you hear, oh, it looks like they were gone 22 years ago. And then when it clicks to 22 eclipse, I thought that was really well done. A little over 53 minutes into the movie and Toretto finally says family. I love it. I also like his dialogue with Fry, letting her know that Johns is more Brian Spillner than Brian O'Connor. That was good to know. Good comedic timing with the leave him. He wouldn't wait for us. And then he pops up. He's like, oh, thought we lost you. I love that. That was brilliant. I don't know how they landed on letting Shaza drive, but she was slamming into walls like a poorly endowed fella on prime night. She wrecked the hell out of that short drive. Women drivers, am I right? Okay, I'm kidding. But damn, she was beating the walls up. The screech when it's getting dark would make your bowels evacuate. Not what you want to hear. Then seeing all those creatures fly out. Yeah, I'm finding somewhere to hide. Great kill of Shaza. Holy moly. Like you said, they ripped her in two. I thought that was awesome. Seeing all the creatures in Riddick's vision was also awesome. Really love how those shots are captured. I'm fully invested in the movie at this point. Each set of scenes hooked me more and more. It's like they keep getting better and better. That's a great way to make a movie.
Yeah, I agree. Jack is still upset over Shaza not staying down as they navigate through the dark ship. A mom thinks the creatures use sound to find their prey. Paris complains they're trapped in an even smaller space as a mom almost has his head pierced by the creature through the door. Riddick cuts them into another part of the ship and they barricade it off. Riddick and Hassan are essentially trapped by a creature in the room. More appear now as Riddick fades into the darkness. Johns opens fire on the creature as they realize light hurts the creatures. It scalds their flesh. Hassan joins them as they talk about all the means of light they have, and Fry wants to stick to the plan and drag the cells back. Fry calls Johns 79 kilos of gutless white meat who can't come up with a plan. Fry says Riddick can get them there in the dark. They exit the ship and Riddick leads the pack. He thinks it looks clear until a creature jump scares them, and he jokes, looks clear again. They load the cells up and get as much light as possible. Riddick says, watch your cuts, they know our blood now. The crew begins their trek to the ship as the creatures are all around them waiting on a mistake. Jack is almost attacked by the creatures and Paris panics. He crawls away into the darkness, disabling the light ropes or whatever those were. He takes a swig of liquor and spits it into his lighter, and we see he's surrounded by the creatures, which tear him to shreds. Fry asks, do I even want to know? As Riddick looks on. All right, Bryce, next set of scenes, what'd you think?
Those were light ropes from the skating rink, tell you what. Look, so being under the cloak of this eclipse and making the movie dark, I thought was smart. Like, it helped to hide some of those production limitations that, you know, we brought up at the start with the budget being smaller and the CG at the time, which, you know, does still, in my opinion, rear its ugly head a little bit here. But my only complaint is that this whole thing and getting darker didn't happen earlier. But then again, we didn't really see the creatures before. And so, you know, now this is a good way to, you know, hide those imperfections if you have a low budget and the CG isn't what you maybe want. And, you know, now since we're trapped in a much smaller space, at least some of the time here, we get some of that claustrophobia aspect that I think is pretty effective here in the set of scenes. Such a badass shot, I think, when Riddick looks up and we get to see predator vision of the animal, you know, and then he slowly backs into the shadow. Very cool little sequence there. Also with Hassan dying and them realizing that, you know, light hurts them. I love that whole little set of scenes. And I loved, you brought it up, though. I love that fucking dialogue and exchange between Riddick and Johns where he goes, looks clear. Monsters fly through with a jump scare. And then it's like, what's it look like now? Looks clear. I don't know. It's just a great line there. I loved that. And the first time you watch this movie, when Riddick mentions about them, you know, minding their cuts because, you know, the monsters are smelling blood. And then Jack looks scared. Like, you think that he or she or whatever is just scared. But obviously you find out why later. So that's something that's cool and caught on a subsequent rewatch. Just a good set of scenes here. And, you know, another very cool shot with Paris blowing the fire. And then you momentarily see that, you know, see him surrounded with all those Starship Trooper bugs. I thought it was great.
I've been waiting the whole episode to get to this part. The line, "I'd rather piss glass," is the first thing I'm going to say the next time one of you fuckers let me watch a comic book movie on this show. Anyway.
Jesus.
Sorry, my bad, everyone. but no, seriously, great fucking line. I'm stealing that for my everyday life. So the man Riddick here is a little bit of Dusty Rhodes. He knows how to do everything. He's a common man. He can fix shit. He can break shit. He knows all kinds of stuff. He's got all this knowledge. So, I mean, man, he's got a little bit of everything going on. man, what the fuck was this creature thing, man? This planet has worse wildlife than Australia. I'm sorry to any listeners in Australia. I'm not saying the whole place has bad wildlife, but there's some crazy shit in Australia, okay? Listen, all right, I'm going to give Brian a little bit of leeway here. My queen, her plan is bad, okay? This is not a good idea, although she's still a queen, so we're going to listen to what she says and shut the fuck up. John's is kind of a dick about it, but anyway, and Dustin will get this reference, but when they're walking around and they're going by this craft, I kept waiting for Baby Fark McGee's axe to walk. I didn't want to stutter over the name there, but I was waiting on the space police from South Park to come out. the space cop to take him to space jail. I will say, I say that every episode, every scene by scene, so my apologies. But I will say, some of this is hard to admit, but a lot of the science and engineering stuff in these movies go over my head. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, man. I don't know shit about engines and fixing stuff and all that stuff. I'm like, yeah, man, that sounds great. That's fine. Last thing, this was a really cool shot of Mr. Antique, as I called him. Surrounded by these creatures after lighting his little light there. That was one of my favorite shots in the whole movie. Scary as fuck. Great jump scare. I thought it was a cool visual again.
So this is the least amount of notes that I have in this entire movie, but very tense when Riddick and Hassan are being stalked by the creature, and then hilarious when Riddick is running and they blind him by the flashlight. I don't know why, but I died laughing. It really took the tension out of the situation to me. I wish they could have done it in a less funny way. The way that he fell, I think it was just Vin Diesel's acting. Like the way he fell and threw himself, I died laughing. Riddick tapping John's on the pecker with a shiv, and that was funny. And I just know that he was thinking, "And you, I'll take my cutter back." Great shot of them running with their glow sticks and the creature circling on them, but an even better shot when Paris spits liquor at his lighter and illuminates around him. We see that he swarmed. His dumbass deserved to die, though. So a lot of action, a lot of stuff's happening here. I just didn't really take much notes. I think I was too hooked in the movie.
Paris is the guy who just got on my nerves in the movie. Fry asks if they're getting close and can we pick up the pace. A mom asks if they're lost and Riddick bought time and found the canyon. He reveals Jack is actually a girl and is menstruating. Riddick says they've been following them after her blood. Fry thinks they should go back, and John snaps on her and reveals Fry wanted to dispose of them all during the ship's wreck. John says verdict's in, and the light moves forward. John's and Riddick talk in front of the group, and Fry wants them to give them space. John's wants to kill the girl and use her as bait to keep creatures off of them. The two men fight now as the others retreat. Riddick gets the upper hand, cutting John's. A creature impales John's and bites his head. Riddick is back with the others, telling Jack not to cry for John's. Imam asks to pray with Riddick, but he says that's pointless. I absolutely believe in God, and I hate the fucker. He questions how much faith Imam has left. Riddick tells him to protect the girl. He'll drag the cells. They take off running through the canyon until a swarm of the creatures fly at them. Riddick says don't look up as we see the creatures attacking each other. They continue on their journey, and suddenly Hassan is attacked. Jack is attacked by a creature, and Fry shines the light on its flesh. Riddick attacks the creature, now grabbing its arms. He hits the circle button repeatedly, spinning around, cutting it over and over. And the next set of scenes are ending. Go ahead, Brian.
Man, this is actually the least amount of notes I have on the whole thing here. Great speech from Cole at the start of this arguing with Fry. I've seen that speech a few times with him arguing with Betch Dutton. I'll say that. But come on, Mike. This dude's right. Why is he made out to be the bad guy? Butch up. Butch up and stick a cork in this fucking kid and let's go. Carolyn, how much do you weigh now? Man, fucking A. Fucking right, man. Let's go. The fight with them, it was fine. Like, we knew it was coming. It was some decent choreography, but it was a little bit underwhelming, if I'm going to be honest. Great kill, though. I think with him getting his head eaten off is definitely worthy of my guy, Johns. I'll also say I really did love the exchange between Riddick and Keith David about God. Great setup, too, for the next set of scenes where Imam tells Riddick, there's my God, Mr. Riddick. You know, kind of jumping ahead a little bit, I know. But that was actually not scripted. Keith David just improvised that, and Tui kept it in. Pause.
I will say, again, I hate to be critical of my queen here, but she kind of is like, can we pick up the pace? And it's like, hey, you know, we don't really know what the fuck is out here around us, okay? We don't really need to pick up the pace. I feel like that was hurried or being hurried for no reason. I will say I feel bad for Jack here. It's a pretty touching scene to see Carolyn and everyone kind of take Jack in like that. And I'm just like that, no longer mad at my queen again. Fuck you, Brian. Johns, I will come fuck you up for being an insensitive prick, you son of a bitch. I feel like Alex Jones, you goddamn son of a bitch, you piece of shit. anyway, sorry. I will slap Johns the way The Rock and Cody Rhodes have been slapping each other, pal. Don't fucking tease me, okay? Anyway, I will say another cool visual for the 13th time. The green light from the flare is providing a really cool visual for me. I'm enjoying this. And like I said earlier, I knew Riddick wasn't going to end up being the quote-unquote bad guy here. I mean, I guess he technically is a little bit, but I think deep down he's kind of a good guy. Fuck you, Johns. Let's go. You're fucking dead, pal. That's right. And you died like a broke-ass bitch. So fuck you, Johns. Anyway, I do love this scene with Riddick and a mom. It shows a different side of Riddick, and I really like it. Some of these shots where the creatures are flying around, really badass. I think they hold up really, really well, and they've withstood the time over 24 years. Go ahead, Dustin.
Mike, you just said something that reminded me of probably my favorite Disney Pixar movie, Wreck-It Ralph, when you said, I think deep down he's a good guy. You're like, Zangief is bad guy, but that doesn't mean I am bad guy. So that was funny. You know, asking if they're getting close and wanting to pick up the pace, I just know Riddick was thinking they should live their lives a quarter mile at a time. Crazy twist that Jack is a girl, but wildly out of pocket. Ooh. From... Listen, pal, that was good. It's a crazy twist that Jack turns out to be a girl, but it's a wildly out-of-pocket line from Johns when he says, butch up and shove a cork in the kid. Jesus, pal. Holy shit. Not really a fan of the cuts from Johns' eyes to Riddick's eyes like that before they fought. Like, once or twice is fine, but as many as they did was just so excessive, and it came across as cheesy and funny to me. Another great kill when Johns gets his head bit off by the creature. I thought that looked great. I like the angle that they used. It was all good. Do not look up. Do not look up. And what she do? Looks up and freezes. Darwin was right. Survival of the fittest.
She sucks.
Riddick looking at Jack being in danger and then turning around was a clear fake out. He never turns his back on family. We knew better. We knew he was going to go back to help. It's another good set of scenes, and I'm getting ready for the finish.
Well done, brother. Hassan falls over and it begins to rain. Riddick mocks Imam, asking again about his god. They hide by the walls of the canyon as Fry asks if they're close. Hassan is dragged up the wall by a creature and Imam cries out. Riddick moves a rock for the others so they can hide in the cave. Riddick drags the cells again as Jack asks Fry he's not coming back, is he, as the light they have fades out. Riddick makes it to the ship and the others look up seeing glowing insects. They stuff as many as they can into a bottle as Riddick gets the ship in working order. Fry leaves the others and heads to Riddick. He likes her survival instinct and laughs at her calling him afraid. She asks for more light to go back for them. He says, come with me. I will leave you here. She begins to weep, saying she can't as he extends his hand. She walks up the ramp and has flashbacks of the original crash. She leaps on him and says she's the captain and not leaving anyone on this rock. He overtakes the situation, asking if she'd die for them. The rock begins to move. It's Fry and Riddick. The four sprint to the ship in the rain. They pause as some creatures fight each other. They run past him, but Riddick falls behind. He's trapped by the creatures. Fry runs towards Riddick, screams. He's alive but injured. She helps him up and says, "I die for them, not you." Suddenly, Fry is impaled by a creature and taken away. Riddick gets the ship fired up as the mom says there's so much prayer he doesn't know where to begin. Riddick cuts the ship's lights off, attracting several creatures. Suddenly, he fires it up, blasting them with flames and mowing over several. He tells Jack to say Riddick is dead somewhere on the planet. The film ends with the ship flying away from the planet. Brian, what'd you think about that ending?
Yeah, this may be unpopular opinion, but by the end of this stuff, I'm not a huge fan of Fry, like I mentioned. I mean, her whole redemption arc being, you know, based on her trying to jettison everyone at the start of the movie was just kind of weak to me. I mean, I would have rather it had been something that we heard about, maybe that she struggled with and that we didn't actually really see on film. I don't know. It didn't hit like I thought it would. And I didn't really care a whole lot about her dying. Like, I mean, yeah, it was unexpected. I thought she'd be the survivor. I'm definitely fine with her not being. But I do think that Riddick should have been the one who sacrificed himself. Like, we didn't need a sequel to this. I always thought that anyway. But, you know, I read that it was actually the original plan to have Riddick die, but they changed it on the fly for more money and franchise reasons. You know, that usual age-old story. But, you know, obviously now that the sequel sucked ass, I thought that it reinforces, you know, that whole thing even more. But, you know, that's Monday morning quarterbacking. And like we discussed, I have no issue pretending the sequels didn't happen. So, but in this one, I do wish Riddick had bit the dust too, and just the kid and Keith David's Imam had survived. Or hell, even better, have Riddick strand them all and fly away, the end. I would have respected the hell out of that. That would have been funny as shit.
Buddy, you are 7 hours and 12 minutes away from me, pal. I will come all the way there to take a shit on your porch, and you see how you like it. Anyway,
Jesus. Sorry, Brian.
My bad. That was an overreaction.
You're emotional.
My fault. Man, I just can't believe they were – look, man, you can say what you want, but they were just going to leave all these other people to die. I mean, I get, you know, it's everybody for themselves out here, but damn, man, that's fucking tough. Also, it rains on this planet? What the fuck? That was so unexpected to me. Like, again, I have no prior knowledge of anything, but just to see it rain on what's supposed to be another planet is fucking wild to me. That's a tough ending for Hassan, man. That's a tough way to go, not going to lie. Again, I've kind of been waiting on the part of the movie where Vin Diesel gets to be this, you know, bald, muscular badass, and we finally get a little bit of that here. You can say what you want. Badass woman here. The GOAT convinces Riddick to go back for everyone because she would die for these people. What a fucking GOAT, okay? The rain adds a lot to these scenes, in my opinion. Not that the creatures weren't scary enough, but the fact that all this is happening in the rain where it makes it even harder to fucking see what's going on. It's just another obstacle, and I like that. I'll say I was really all in on this film until this goddamn ending. How dare you sons of bitches kill off my fucking queen like this? And I got to be honest, when she's flew out of the air, the fucking bridge to My Heart Will Go On hit in my head. You know the one. Yeah, that fucking hit. That's how devastated I was. That shit was sad, son. Took my score down a whole point. Sorry, Anita.
Hassan getting snatched up like that was great. There's no downtime here. They're still in danger, and I like how they did that. Turns out Riddick can turn his back on family. He's not Dominic Toretto. Holy shit, man. Just abandon everyone here. That's the plan. All right. Bold move by Fry to attack him. Good thing he didn't have a Torquich handy is all I'm saying.
Damn.
Now something that makes no sense to me. When Fry was going back, or she was going to go back by herself to get the others, Riddick threw her one of those light belts or, you know, whatever it was, threw her some lights. But then when they actually went back together, she didn't take it with them. Just the liquor bottles full of the glowing larva. Why? That was really weird to me. I love how they shot Fry's death, made it seem like Riddick stabbed her at first because he kept that shiv on him, but it was a creature that got her. I thought that was very well done because even though he turned out to be an okay guy, you still had doubts all along up until the end that he was a bad guy. So I love the tight camera angle on them to we don't know what happened, you just know that it's bad. Also, I love that he had to be a badass one more time and take out as many of the creatures as possible on the way out. This was a very satisfactory ending. I liked it.
All right, guys, jump into our social media comments and questions. We'll do Instagram first. Real Matt Sears coming and love this one. Terrible sequel to it. Third brought it back closer to the first one.
No.
I haven't seen them.
Third ones. Don't watch them. They're both terrible.
You know, it's so funny, Brian, that you said that, oh, yeah, the others don't exist to me, and I know it's easy for Dustin, too. No. For those of you who don't know, it's not easy for me. I can't just omit parts of a franchise that I don't like just because I don't like them. Like, even Coming to America 2, the biggest piece of dog shit that I think I've seen in a long time, like, that movie exists to me. It exists. I have to have, if I own one of the movies on Blu-ray or DVD, I have to have the whole collection. So, don't listen to Brian. Watch the whole Riddick trilogy.
Go ahead.
All right.
Watch 2016 Ghostbuster 2 while you're at it.
Good luck cutting that.
I'll jump over to X Twitter now. That guy commented, filmed long before Vin Diesel was Furious or Guardian. He was a glossy-eyed convict with built-in night vision. Seeing this the year it released, and I still enjoy it to this day. Also, Rada, call me sometime with some laughing emojis. Love the show, fellas. Can't wait to listen to this episode.
Great shit.
Anita Russell commented, the blood donor herself. Think you guys are awesome and make my work shift bearable. We appreciate that. Love this movie. This was my first introduction to Vin Diesel, and I love the character of Riddick. Can't wait to hear your take on it. I know some of the guys aren't sci-fi fans, so I expect a mixed bag. I don't know. I think we might all be in this together.
We're all okay.
Sean Irwin commented, I actually saw this movie after Chronicles of Riddick. Riddick is a great character and definitely smarter than everyone else in the movie. Though that's not exactly hard to do. Great movie, though. Definitely worth it. All right, Randy Smith, go Dogs. Actually, don't. Fuck them. He said, this movie is a great movie to sit down with the family and enjoy. It isn't amazing. No, it's a solid movie, but it lacks a rewatchability for me. And he used the Vin Diesel family gift. I can understand that. It's not super, super rewatchable for me, but I did enjoy it. Dustin, Brian, y'all got any fun facts you want to share?
Yeah, I've got a couple. You want me to go ahead, Dustin?
Yeah, go for it.
The contact lenses Vin Diesel wore in the movie, while a prototype during production, were briefly available to the public from LensQuest following the release of the film. They were called Shine Job, like in the movie. Funny, in eighth grade, that was the thing. Was trying to get those disposable like contacts, all crazy colors, 3 years before this movie. But just reminded me. So there you go. Two fun facts in one.
I thought you were about to say that was the thing in eighth grade, shine jobs. And I was like, whoa, you about to teach me something here?
Whoa, hey. I said earlier, it reminded me a lot of Alien to an extent. And to that point, this film developed from David Toy's unused idea for Alien 3 from 1992 involving a space prison. Although I don't know why that said unused, because Alien 3 was in a space prison. So I don't know, man. I just work here. Whatever. That's all I had.
All right. I got four here, it looks like. And, you know, if I've repeat something that's been said in the episode, that's par for the course for me. The hot desert where they filmed was actually about 10 degrees Celsius, 50 degrees Fahrenheit. They were misting water on the actors to make it appear as if they were sweating. The full-size spaceship's stage used in the movie can be found in the Australian outback mining town of Cooper Pedy in South Australia. Bought by a local businessman soon after the filming was completed, it sits out in the open. Entry to the site is on Hutchison Street, opposite Winch Street. It's marked to be seen clearly on Google Maps. More information can be found on the web. Really, I just include that because I wanted to say Cooper Pedy. The character of Riddick was a woman in the early draft of the script. I think we said that one already. And then I know you said this one earlier, but I'm going to say it again. If there weren't enough Fast and Furious references in this episode, Vin Diesel obviously played Dominic Toretto and Cole Hauser played Carter Verone in Too Fast, Too Furious, which is why I said, and you, I'll take my cutter back. Don't worry about it, cuz. I said, forget about it, cuz.
Man, I thought you were going to do 7 degrees of David Arquette there for a second. I was going to be like, all right, do that shit. Let's go.
Oh, we could probably do it.
Yeah, there's a way. I don't know if Vin Diesel and David Arquette ever been in a film together. All right, just so everyone knows, even though it happened twice ever, I've remembered the budget and gross. Okay? All right. Fucking 300 episodes. Goddamn forgot twice. Anyway, the budget, $23 million, estimated, by the way. Gross worldwide was $53,187,600. 659. So, safe to say, that's probably one of the reasons it got a sequel.
Absolutely. All right, let's jump into our favorite kill, least favorite kill in the rating. I'll just go first. Favorite kill, there was quite a few for me to choose from. I really liked, now I'm forgetting all their names. I like John's kill. I like Paris' kill, Shaz's kill. Even Ali's kill was pretty good. But after, you know, some tough thinking, Anita, I chose Paris just because I really liked the lighter shot and then seeing all the creatures around him. But all four of those kills were really good. And, you know, least favorite kill for me was definitely Fry. Not that it was bad. It was a powerful scene. But unlike Brian, I didn't hate Fry. I enjoyed her character. She had a little bit of a redemption arc that I enjoyed. Like you mentioned in your tweet, though, I'm not a huge sci-fi fan, but I had fun with this movie. It kept me entertained. I do think it's probably about 15 minutes too long. You could cut some of the stuff out, all this trekking back and forth and some dialogue. But I had fun with it. I would watch it again. I gave it a 7.5.
Man, I had a lot of favorite kills, honestly. I think the funniest one was, I know I said it was a tough way to go, but the funniest one was Hassan to me for some reason. So I got a good chuck out of me, so I'm going to go there. My least favorite should be fucking obvious. Goddamn bastards killing off the best character in fucking movie at the end. Anyway, all right, listen. So I had a fun time with this. Again, not my cup of tea. Probably not going to rewatch it, but I think for what it was, I thought it was a lot of fun. And I think Vin Diesel was really good in this character, actually. And he's not like my favorite actor of all time. I don't hate the Fast and Furious franchise. It just isn't something that I'm like super duper invested in. They're fun popcorn movies to me. So it was kind of fun to see him in a little bit of a different role. And I thought they did a good job. I thought the acting was good. Visuals hold up over time. And I thought it told, you know, a good little story here. So all in all, I gave this movie a 6.75.
Okay. Let me go ahead and go real quick. So my favorite kill was Shaza. She got ripped in two and carried away, and it was awesome. It honestly reminded me of the pterodactyls in Jurassic World. So I thought that was pretty cool. Least favorite kill was Buddy at the beginning with the pole in his chest. Like, what a lame-ass way to go, and his jump scare pissed me off, so piss on that whole scene. As far as my general thoughts and rating, it's a badass movie that has great natural tension built in and a great plot. It's underrated and underappreciated in the grand scheme of things. I don't feel like Pitch Black gets talked about it enough. Everybody talks about Chronicles of Riddick for some reason that I know. I think it's because it came out when we were in high school. I do have some minor issues that I mentioned throughout the review, but overall, it's a very solid movie. I gave it an 8.
Okay. Real fast and furious. I will, best kill to me, Shaza ripped in half. Worst kill to me, friend of the show, for Astorani as Ali and is off screen. I didn't really care for that. My thoughts, super quick, a prime example of a movie that is done right on a tight budget. It's crazy that it's the only one in the franchise and actually has zero sequels at all. Crazy. I actually gave it a 7.75.
That gives us a composite score of a 7.5. IMDb has it at a 7. And Rotten Tomatoes has it at a 59%. So this movie is definitely more liked by the fans than it is the critics.
Hell yeah, brother. Y'all got any final thoughts for Anita Russell's final girl donor pick before we just shout out our blood donors?
No, thank you for doing it. Thank you for doing it.
Absolutely. We really appreciate
it.
I enjoyed the movie. I was a little hesitant, but I really liked it. Let's shout out our blood donors. Really appreciate y'all. And let's start off with Anita Russell herself. Really appreciate your donation. And we also got another final girl donor, Christina Tower. Really appreciate it. Camper Level Reoccurring, Clayton J, Nina, Michelle Mirza, The Horror Movie Crew Podcast, Alex Seligson, Michael Evans. Camp Counselor Reoccurring is Edwin Hernandez Gunn, Joe Swinford, Shan, Adrian Aiello, Karen, Brian Samick, Andrew Ferguson, Matt Strickland, Brooke Maley, Thorne David Phillips, Heather Superdoc, and Jennifer Davis from the Too Close to Home Podcast. Really appreciate y'all's support. It means a lot to us. Hey, Mike, do you want to announce your theme for next month? And what your birthday pick is going to be next week.
Ah, okay. So my theme for next month, I went with sequel month. Very excited. It didn't have to be a direct follow-up. It can be any sequel of a franchise. I was very excited for that. And I feel like we ended up getting some really fucking good picks out of it. Like, I don't...
Especially the comic book movies that were picked, right, Mike?
Yeah, except for that film. That's the worst one of the bunch. There's no doubt about that. Fucking fucking vampire comic book. What the fuck is this? Anyway, all right. My birthday bonus for next week, by the way, shout out to that. It was changed on the fly, but you guys don't need to know what it was because eventually we'll come back to that episode. But for now,
we, in the to be very topical and be in the spirit of what's going on in pop culture, we will be conducting our very own March Madness bracket episode. That's right, baby. The 64 best horror villains broken down by region going off against each other. And we will have a special guest host on to help us in case there were any tiebreakers. It's a voice you may be a little familiar with if you're a day one fan of Don't Go Out There.
Nice. 64 villains. Good. Nice. That's a lot of villains.
I cannot wait. Hey, I can't wait to vote for the light pole all the way through to the finals. And real quick, back by popular demand, Cole Hauser, who's in this movie, he was also in 2006's The Breakup with Jennifer Aniston, who was in Friends with, you know, Courtney Cox, who was married to David Arquette. So there you go.
Boom. There it is. There it fucking is. What a guy. What a guy. I like it. All right.
Hell yeah,
great
brother.
Way to end the episode.
Anita, we really appreciate your donation. It means a lot to us. And it means even more to me that you just enjoy our show during your work and it makes it bearable. That means a lot to me. I love reading those messages. We really appreciate all the listeners. We hope you'll enjoy this episode. We'll be back next week. Just want to remind everybody.